Thanks, Brandy, and thank you everyone for having me. I'm hoping to answer that question, which is, okay, what are the words to the song for beef, and how have we measured sustainability, and how are we beginning to go down that path of building trust with our consumers and starting to change this perception of sustainability in the beef space? So Sarah and JP both did a great job setting me up. You're going to see some repeat slides. For those of you that don't know, Sarah and I are academic sisters, so we train together at Davis. We tend to present similarly and copy each other often. So bear with me on some of these repeat slides. But I wanted to start really, when did the checkoff engage in beef sustainability? Because sustainability was not a demand driver. This was not something that the checkoff funded. It's not safety. It's not human nutrition. It's not product quality. And yet it sits up there with our major research programs as an industry and is funded by your checkoff dollars. So in 2006, the United Nations released the report, Livestock's Long Shadow. And Sarah gave you a great background about what that means, and what the report entails. But what it meant for beef is that and folks like Time Magazine made claims like a 16-ounce T-bone is like a Hummer on a plate, and switching to vegetarianism can shrink your carbon footprint by 1.5 tons of carbon dioxide equivalents per year. Okay? Sarah and I were in graduate school together when the city of San Francisco started the first Meatless Monday campaigns. In California, that was not done because of nutrition like it was in many other cities. That was done because of this report. And so, folks, the checkoff engaged. And that report that she referenced, Clearing the Air, Livestock's Contributions to Climate Change, that was funded by the beef checkoff. And I was one of the co-authors. I was a first quarter, we're quarter systems at Davis, graduate student. We studied under Frank Mittloner, and for those of you who don't know Frank, he's this very intimidating German man. And we were stacked on top of each other, you know, four graduate students in a teeny tiny office. And he walked in with this giant report, slammed it on my desk, and said, "Welcome to the team, Stackhouse. Figure out what this says." So Sarah talked to you about what that report said. And there were some inconsistencies, right? But by that time, the ship had sailed. By that time, beef had a challenge. By that time, we had lost trust in the eyes of our consumers, and we had to act. And that's when the checkoff began to engage. So you've already heard from JP and Sarah that we've got a big world to feed. I'm going to add one little statistic. I think it's a little, puts things into perspective. In the third world, and in our country as well, we have documented that as income increases 10%, the consumption of red meat increases 9%. Folks, you're going to be in business for a long time, okay? That's the good news. We're going to ship it across seas. A lot of it's going to go somewhere else, but we're going to begin to feed people. We're going to see countries explode. We're hopefully going to lift this world out of poverty, and that is something that agriculture is very passionate about. It's something that you are all very passionate about in this room, and I'm excited to be a part of that. This also means that this isn't just a challenge for beef, okay? Beef isn't the only commodity that needs to become more sustainable. If we're going to do this, if we're going to feed people with fewer resources, onions needs to get better, potatoes, lettuce, tomatoes. I mean, the list, the gamut. We have all got to rise above. We've all got to become more efficient. We all have to do more with less. So let's talk about how sustainability has changed. So Sarah gave us a great background about how it started. It was a greenhouse gas issue, no doubt about it. Today, it's different. Today, sustainability is about continuous improvement. We've done a lot of consumer research. I don't have time to share that with you today. That consumers' expectation of us through the lens of sustainability is responsibility. You're going to be responsible in the way you produce my food. And so in that lens of responsibility also comes a caveat that it's about a continuous improvement over time. And we know through tons of consumer research that the consumer does not expect us to be perfect today. They never have, and we don't see that changing. We expect them always to accept us to be working to get better. So the definition of sustainability, as Sarah pointed out, is challenging. And if we did a poll and I asked each of you what your definition of sustainability was, each of you would have a different answer. And that's okay. That's completely okay. But I think when we think about it at its core, and when most people think about it at its core, and let me tell you, folks, most of the time I'm not presenting to producer audiences. Most of the time I'm in front of doctors, registered dietitian, influencer-type individuals. Even at their core, sustainability is about feeding people. It's about producing more with less. It's about understanding that our resources on this planet are finite, and we've got a big, big world to feed. We know that beef is part of that solution. We know people are going to continue to demand the high-quality protein that we produce because we know that's what countries do. And so in 2010, your operating committee funded the largest, most comprehensive life cycle assessment that's ever been conducted in animal agriculture. Okay? And that's what I'm here to share with you. Is the project perfect? No. Is the science around sustainability perfect? I hope Sarah made that perfectly clear that it's not. But I'm going to begin to teach you or show you or give you the words to the song we've all got to be singing around sustainability for beef. So the first thing I want to start with is that a zero impact is not possible. And I learned to include this slide as I was presenting to a group of PhD students. Now, when I went to school, you couldn't get your PhD in sustainability, and that wasn't so long ago. But these were a group of PhD students studying to become sustainability experts at Yale. And it occurred to me that they did not understand this concept that a zero impact is not possible. So, folks, I'm going to teach you to always start with that conversation. The clothes we wear, the vehicles we drive, the food we eat, the houses we live in, everything causes an impact. And that's okay, because that's how we sustain life. And that is what it is all about. Sustaining life. But don't kid yourself. When you begin to have this conversation with somebody who may not be in touch with animal agriculture or food production in general, they may not understand this. They may believe that a zero impact is actually possible. So start with that. Start with that basic understanding that it's not. So I like to start out high level, what did we find? So I'm going to go a little backwards from the typical traditional academic talk and give you the results first. So, folks, we have a good story. In 6 years, our overall sustainability has improved 5%. And if you focus on only our environmental and social sustainability, it's improved 7%. So the next question I always get from beef producers is, I didn't even know what the word sustainability meant 5 years ago. I certainly wasn't trying to improve it. So where did the improvements come from? Innovations, things you do every single day. Anything we do to improve efficiency gains results in a positive outcome when we measure sustainability. So from improvements to crop yields, the good work John Deere, Case, New Holland, and others have done in machinery technology, irrigation technology, I have a funny story about that. I'm a California girl, and I married a Kansan, which I love him. He's the best guy ever. But his family is so-so about me. Okay, so the blonde hair, I study sustainability. I mean, it's good I work for NCBA. That's a real positive. But really, really, I am still, you know, it's been 4 years and it's the verdict is still out from on their perception of me. So we're home for harvest, which is new for me. You know, I grew up in a ranching family, but really in California, you know, we pick things, you know, high commodity type crops. So I'd never experienced harvest like y'all. Experienced harvest. So the first learning curve I had was that they were not going to put me in the combine to drive, which was just so offensive. But I got over that, and we were home for harvest 1 year. I was driving a grain truck, and my father-in-law had put in some new pivots. And he was asking me over dinner, mocking me, how the sustainability project was going, which he thinks is absolutely ridiculous that his checkoff dollars are having to now define a word that somebody else created, okay? And I tell him, I say, oh, it's going really great, Dad. You know, beef has such a wonderful story to tell. I love my job. And, hey, thanks for all your help. He's like, help? How am I helping you? I'm like, well, hey, that new irrigation system you put in, you upgraded it from the 70s. It's more water efficient. It's more energy efficient. You've helped me out. So anytime we upgrade anything in agriculture, we're getting a positive result on sustainability. We see tremendous advancements in manure management, precision farming. I mean, my gosh, the fact that we can you know, target different varieties across a field? That's tremendous. That's incredible technology, and we see it. We see it when we start studying these things. And, of course, animal performance. Everything you guys are here, improving reproduction, improving your genetics, improving nutrition, all of those things help when we need to tell a sustainability story. And then off-farm, there's been tremendous advancements past that packing plant. We've got incredible biogas capture. Do you know that our packing plants are powering 60% of their energy from captured biogas? It's incredible. Closed-loop water cooling systems, wastewater recycling, and my favorite, right-size packaging. Okay, an animal scientist. I didn't know anything about packaging until I started this project. But I learned all about right-sizing things. So I have a little nephew. His name's McCray. And he came up to me the other day, and he has a Capri Sun. And I say, that's interesting. I think you're getting gypped on the juice, right? The Capri Sun seems smaller. So I had him bring it over to me. Nope, still the same amount of juice, less packaging material to get the goods to the consumer. So any of you actually have to buy beef in this room? Nobody? I'm the only one. My parents stopped sending me beef. It's terrible. That was one of those things I graduated. They said no more. Anyway, well, when you go to the grocery store, go to the meat case and check out our 1-pound ground beef chubs, because they're packaged right out of the packing plant in a vacuum-packaged 1-ground beef chub. And when we do that, we improve our sustainability because we're using less packaging material. About half the packaging material is actually serving ground beef in the traditional way on a styrofoam tray to get the product to the consumer. So it makes a difference. So there's been tremendous innovations, and we have seen results from these things. But there were also some things that surprised us about doing this project. First and foremost, we surveyed 90 different stakeholders, both critics and friends of the beef industry, and we asked them, what are your perceived definitions or your perceived problems of beef sustainability? And interestingly enough, greenhouse gases were 10th on the list. They're focused more now on animal welfare, traceability, other things. You're going to see a graph that follows. And then Sarah did a great job talking about food waste. This little booger. I got to learn a lot about food waste. Do you know that we can improve our sustainability 10% overnight if we reduce beef waste by half? 10% overnight. So let me tell you a little story about my dad. I told him this little fact. And as a good businessman, he said, well, they could waste all the beef they want as long as they buy it. Right? Okay. And I said, Dad, how long did it take you to get a 20% improvement in your animal performance? And he said, I don't think I've ever gotten that. I said, okay. Now, when there's a misperception about the impact of beef, think about them throwing away that 20% you've gained. So, guys, even though we've got a good business plan with the food waste, we do need to reduce it. We've got to begin to close that efficiency gap in the food waste area. So those 90 stakeholders, what did they say about beef sustainability? What did they say our problems were? Well, folks, there's a lot of problems, a lot of perceived problems about beef sustainability. From social, they include anything from labor rights to animal welfare to occupational health and safety, to consumer education and economics, it's trade, quality, traceability, rural economies, efficiency, and environment, biodiversity, air emissions, water emissions, land management. My gosh, the list just goes on and on and on and on and on. So this should prove that everyone defines sustainability differently. So the Beef Checkoff came up with a definition to include all of these misperceptions. And our definition is to meet the growing global demand for beef, number one, by balancing environmental responsibility, economic opportunity, and social diligence. Okay, so there's a reason some of these definitions are so broad. So let's talk a little bit about how we measure sustainability in beef. First of all, a life cycle assessment is the methodology that we use. And a life cycle assessment is basically an accounting system of all the inputs and outputs that come into a value chain. Now that's hard for beef. Because up here, in this live animal portion, we have a value chain that's dependent on weather, soil, cattle breeds, different regions, where's the animal at its lifespan, what's the nutrition, et cetera, et cetera. So we use the Meat Animal Research Center as a starting point, And we use the integrated farm systems model, which is a biogeochemical model that basically uses math, and every minute weather is inputted into the model for 25 years. So in other words, we take soil type, we take weather to begin to grow our forage. We take the forage the model produces, we begin to grow our cattle based on those forage models, and so on. But it's very complex. Too complex to cover in 30 minutes. So, for the purpose of this particular talk, we're going to focus on the packing sector to further describe a life cycle assessment. So remember, it's all about inputs and outputs. In the packing sector, one of our packing collaborators, we were sitting around with them, we had three, we were going through all of their input lines, 600,000 different lines in Excel. Okay, that's how many inputs they have to process a carcass. And we got to the line item of toilet paper. Okay, so we knew how much toilet paper that plant used every single day. The first question was, oh my gosh, how many rolls of toilet paper in a case of toilet paper? Okay, that was question number one. Question number two, how much paper is on every roll of toilet paper? Question number three, is that paper used for toilet paper greater or less than 1% of the total paper used in that plant? Because if it's greater than 1%, you have to include it into a life cycle assessment in the impacts that it takes to producing beef. And if it's less than 1%, life cycle assessment rules say you can exclude it. Folks, toilet paper is not included in your life cycle assessment. Let's thank our lucky stars. But there is a lot that is. So when we talk about tallying something up like a carbon footprint, the carbon footprint includes the impact of greenhouse gases that come from fertilizer, that come from pharmaceuticals that we give our cattle, so antibiotics, vaccines, etc., come from any hay that comes in, comes from paper that's used in the packing plants, comes from any, you know, food safety measure we're using in packing plants, etc. Those things all total up to get us our impacts. So think about toilet paper when you think about how complex these life cycle assessments are, especially for something as complex as beef. So what did we find? This is a high-level graph data chart showing you costs, which are normalized, and environmental impact, and actually social impact is also included on the y-axis. Now, this graph is a little bit backwards. High costs and high environmental impact are actually towards the xy-axis. Normally, it's the other way. So this area out here would be an area of high sustainability, and this is an area of low sustainability. So you can see that from 2005 to 2011, we have improved about 5%. Now, folks, why are we trending backwards here? You guys don't know because you don't actually buy beef. But costs down here are in consumer price. What's happened to the price of beef? Gone up tremendously. Now, my father, the businessman, would say, well, that's good for me. And it is. But let's put it into the context of lamb. How many of you have eaten lamb in the last month? One, two, three hands. That's more of you than actually buy beef, which is impressive. Okay. Now, why don't the rest of you eat lamb? Then there's a generation here, right, that says lamb doesn't taste good because I had to eat it in the war and I don't want it. But there's a generation in here, a young generation, a millennial generation, who would eat a lot of lamb. But it is too expensive. It is priced out of the marketplace. Do we ever want to do that for beef? No, we always want to be the center of the plate. So that consumer price is an important part of sustainability. So let's take that y-axis and pull it out. What do we have? That gives us an environmental fingerprint. We measured over 14 different impact categories in this life cycle assessment. It's the biggest one that's ever been done. I'm not going to share all of the results with you today. But we looked at resource use, land use, water use, energy use, emissions. This actually goes to air, soil, and water. And then we have two social components, the only two that are certified by the life cycle assessment ISO standards. So this is the only two social things we can measure right now in life cycle assessment methodology, toxicity potential and occupational illnesses and accidents. And you can see that our fingerprint for 2011 is smaller than that of 2005. So where's all this coming from? So let's talk about energy use. Actual consumptive energy use, one-third of our footprint, so tallied up, is owned by the consumer. One-third of our energy footprint. What does that tell you? A, we live in big houses, folks. B, refrigeration and cooking in those big houses when we're cooking meals for families of two or four is pretty darn inefficient. Pretty inefficient, okay, when we think about it. The second most common contributions come from irrigation pumps. We have a great story here to tell. We've been able to reduce energy use in 6 years by 2% from the advancement of biogas capture in our packing plants. They're big energy users. Okay, so anything they do to reduce that energy use is going to make a difference in the whole chain. And then right-sized packaging. That ground beef chup. Packaging has a huge impact in the energy footprint of our industry. So the other thing we measured is soil emissions. And through this model, it's actually done through contributions to landfill. Believe it or not, the farm is the largest contributor to landfill. That should surprise most people. When you think of a farm, you don't think of much of anything going to a landfill. But when we land apply fertilizer, the impact of fertilizer, what goes into making fertilizer, there's a contribution that goes to landfill during that manufacturing process of fertilizer. So the impact has to come to beef, and it comes through that farming component. The second largest contributor is food waste. And this is responsible for more greenhouse gases than beef altogether, is food waste into landfills. Problem. You're going to see this little guy raise his ugly head over and over again. We have a fantastic story here to tell. In 6 years, we've reduced our emissions to soil and our contributions to landfills by 7%. So Sarah did a great job describing greenhouse gases. I'm going to add one caveat to that. You remember her CO2, methane, nitrous oxide at 265, right? It's kind of the mega one for agriculture. Refrigeration units, the gases that go into actually making refrigerant, have a global warming potential of approximately 4,500 times one molecule of CO2. So when refrigeration units leak, it's a problem. And there is a lot of leaking refrigeration units in our retail stores. They're working on it, but it does contribute to our overall carbon footprint. In 6 years, we've got a great story here to tell. We've been able to reduce our carbon footprint by 2%. Emissions to water are something that are near and dear to most farmers and ranchers' hearts. Largest contribution comes from the farm. Okay, this is simple. No biological process is 100% efficient. Every time it rains, there will be leaching. If we land apply any fertilizer amendment, there will be more leaching. That is it. The plants cannot take up all of the nutrients in the soil. Food waste is the second largest contributor to emissions, something we can't control outside of beef's control. However, we have a fantastic story here. And believe it or not, this is the consumer's favorite story that we have to tell. We've been able to improve or reduce our emissions to water by 10% from doing a better job with crop yields, land applying manure, land applying fertilizer, precision farming, the incredible technology that's happened to produce crops for cattle. Water use is something that beef is criticized a lot for. In 6 years, we've been able to reduce our water use by 3%. That's incredible. Really, really, really something you should be proud of. Finally, the one that shocks most people is the improvements that we've seen in occupational illnesses and accidents. And in this particular model, they allow you to customize about 5% of this overall impact to two things that are different than occupational illnesses and accidents. So illnesses and accidents, of course, are recorded by OSHA and a number of other different labor organizations. But in our model, we also were able to include improvements that we've seen in E. coli, reductions in E. coli, and also improvements that we've seen in animal welfare at packing plants and the positive work that's been done there. So we have a 32% improvement in occupational illnesses and accidents, welfare, and reductions of food safety and food pathogen-borne bacteria in 6 years. Really something we should be proud of. So, folks, I'm going to leave you with a few things. I think when I started this job, and actually when I graduated from school, the question was, how long are we going to be talking about sustainability? When is it going to go away? And I'm here to tell you, I think we're in it for the long haul. I think it's here to stay. It's being built into our biggest customers' mission statements, i.e. Walmart. And this is being pulled into a culture of business. And we are a huge business. We're a little bit different business. We're more diverse. But we have tremendous opportunity in this space. We're perceived as the worst. But trust me, folks, nobody has a story like you do to tell about sustainability. It's tremendous. It's a fantastic opportunity, and it's something you should be very, very proud of. There's two other sustainability efforts I want to bring your attention to. They're not checkoff funded, so I'm not going to talk about them a lot. But we have the Global Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. And in March of this year, we launched the U.S. Roundtable for Sustainable Beef. Since March, the U.S. Roundtable for Sustainable Beef has 92 founding members, 48 of which are producers, state associations, feeding companies, ranchers. There's 5 retail organizations, 15 NGOs. It has a large constituency of allied industry, producers, packers, civil society, and retailers, of course. And this is a multi-stakeholder effort to kind of come together and begin to build trust and to talk through some of these issues. So if you have more questions about that, please go to the website, usrsb.org. And finally, I'm going to end with some things, with some topics to keep in mind. I think when we first started sustainability research, it was a big ask. In fact, the operating committee only passed it by one vote. That's never happened in the history of your operating committee. So this was a very challenging topic for that operating committee. But I think that it's set us up, not just to be at the table, but to lead. And to lead in a way that is only known to beef. Folks, we're dairy no longer has a better sustainability program than we do. We are set up to move forward in this area in a leadership role. We've got good science. It's giving us a great baseline. We're able to focus the supply chain in the right areas for improvement, i.e. food waste. We would have never known about food waste had we not done this research. And it effectively addresses the needs for more sustainable alternatives. And then I always end my talk with these three things. So keep in mind, when you hear the word sustainability, know that it's about a continuous improvement over time. It's a journey, not a destination. And we have a sustainable product today. We have 6th and 7th generation ranchers. How many other commodities or businesses can claim that? None. And there will be a 9th, 10th, and 11th. And we will improve consumer trust. We will change the perception of beef sustainability. And we'll come together to get it done. So with that, if you're interested in more information on beef sustainability research, please check out our website. And I would be happy to answer any questions, Brandy, if we have any time.